Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 11th of November 2013, the podcast that listens when E.F. Hutton talks. This is your host, Shane Killian. Joining me again this week is Tim Dyson. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Good day, everybody.
Also joining us for the first time, you might know him as TNU on the forum and TNU 1138 on YouTube. Please welcome to the podcast, Daniel Wilcox.
Hello.
So a while back we talked about golden rice, a genetically modified strain of rice that's high in beta carotene, and how its use in the Philippines could stop hundreds of thousands of children from going blind and even dying from vitamin A deficiency.
And hey, who could possibly have a problem with that, right?
Apparently Greenpeace does, because we talked about how dumb it was for them to be against it, and great that the Philippines was finally getting it. And since then, these nice, caring, liberal, progressive environmentalists have been sabotaging the test crops and burning them down just weeks before harvesting. It's just crazy.
Yeah, last I checked, isn't progressive supposed to mean moving forward, not moving back to the days where everyone had to be a farmer or else we'd all starve to death?
Yeah.
It's the same problem with the vaccine nonsense. It's like, okay, this is saving people's lives, okay? It's feeding people. Don't you care about... And we're supposed to be the heartless ones?
I know, right?
Admittedly, this kind of hits close to home for me because I'm actually, legally blind, partially visually impaired here.
Well, because the problem is, if they accept this, then that means that they also have to accept a lot of premises that go against dogma, and things like profit is bad, capitalism is bad, but the problem is, golden rice was produced by people looking to make money, and it was produced by capitalism, all that sort of thing, and they can't accept that, so they have to invent any excuse they can to badmouth it, because their dogma is more important to them than poor people. Sad but true.
Well, so now Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, has come out against them and given them some very well-deserved criticism. And what he says is, quote, "I'm still proud of the work Greenpeace did during the 15 years I was in the leadership. I left because it had drifted from a humanitarian effort to save civilization from all-out nuclear war to an organization that sees humans as the enemies of the Earth. How else could it justify its opposition to golden rice?"
And really... the arguments they make against it don't even make any sense. We might accidentally create some horrid plant that'll cause death? Yeah, possible, but if you really think about it, if that's really a risk, wouldn't it be more likely to happen in nature than in a laboratory?
Or much more likely to happen with hybridization. Because with hybridization, it's like taking your deck of cards and just shuffling them all up and dealing with them however it goes, whereas GMO is like picking out the one specific card you want. And not getting any of the extra stuff along with it.
Yeah, like you know how farmers selectively breed the wooliest sheep and get woolier sheep and all that sort of thing. That's all it really is. It's just it's being done in a lab and in a much less haphazard way.
I have two words for you. Purple carrots.
Yep. Carrots in nature are purple.
Yep, the ones you're eating in the supermarket, the orange ones, they're mutations.
I forget the story. There was some kind of, like, king or something who was associated with the color orange or something like that.
The House of Orange.
Yeah, the ruling house at the time. It caught on, and now the non-orange carrots are harder to find.
Yeah, actually, Bob Chipman, Movie Bob, does a big picture episode on this called Feeding Edge.
Give me a link to that. I'll put it in the show notes.
All right.
But, you know, they're talking about environmental risk, Greenpeace being concerned that golden rice will cross with other rice plants. What is that going to do other than give other rice plants the ability to make beta carotene and make things even better?
And even if that's possible, you know, you never know, of course, but that's a maybe risk. We do know that the risk that malnutrition holds, it'll kill them.
Well, and it's also an issue of blindness. Vitamin A also plays an important role in the immune system. And I thought all these, you know, greenies were all about, oh, we need to strengthen our body's natural immune system. Well, guess what? Beta-carotene does that, unlike a lot of their, you know, supplements and crap like that.
It's really shameful. These are people who are healthier, live longer, all because of the very things that they now rally against.
God, reminds me of that whole Walmart protest thing.
Where, like, five people walked out and stuff like that.
Yeah, like, most of it was the opposition.
Well, I mean, it really smacks of first world problems because one of the things they said was basically, well, why don't they take vitamin A pills? Well, maybe if they could afford to take vitamin A pills. I mean, isn't that right up there with let them eat cake?
That's exactly what it is. So when they're whining, the evil corporations doing all these bad things, like, just point to this. It's just projection of the highest order.
But aren't vitamin A pills even more artificial?
Maybe, I'm not sure. Because this isn't really vitamin A, it's beta carotene, which your body then turns into vitamin A.
I mean, I really couldn't believe it when I heard them say things like that. Like, are you serious? Is that some kind of a joke? Or are you really that clueless? And if you're really that clueless to what the state of things are in the third world and things like that, then you really shouldn't be doling out advice like this.
Does this remind anyone else of the South Park episode where they found a cure for AIDS? And it turns out, it's a lot of cash dumped into your bloodstream. So they go to Africa and they say, we found the cure for AIDS! Just inject all your cash into your bloodstream! And they're like,
they don't have any cash.
Oops. Genetically modified food. You've all eaten it. We've all eaten it. Everyone, just cool off.
And the news about our online rights just gets worse and worse. A U.S. court has ruled that simply changing your IP address is against the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
And like all the laws they try to make out of the internet, it just begs the question, how exactly do you plan to enforce this, lads?
Well, just so everyone knows, the IP address is that number that definitively identifies your computer on the internet. But here's the thing. While web servers and things like that need to keep using the same IP address, it's called a static address, most of us regular users use dynamic addresses that change on a regular basis. And that's actually one of the things that helps keep you secure from hackers. Since if people's IP addresses keep changing, they have to start all over to figure out who's vulnerable to what. And this is just a natural point. Your IP address is going to change like every 2 or 3 days or 5 days or whatever your ISP sets it for.
Actually, I have a question about this. This came up in an earlier podcast involving random numbers. Are these genuine random numbers or fake random numbers?
Well, the IP address is not random. What happens is your ISP has a pool of IP addresses that it can give out to people. And as people, when you sign on to the internet and you connect, then it gives you an IP address, and then you have a lease on that IP address that lasts for so long, and then at the end of that lease, you need to go out and get another IP address. These aren't random. In fact, they can't be random. They need to be able to route the packets to that address.
That always had me a bit confused.
So, in other words, according to this law, every single person on the internet is now breaking the law.
Yeah, pretty much.
Weren't we already breaking the law?
Pretty much, but here, it's just another case of it. Just another case of trying to regulate something they know absolutely nothing about. I mean, it's just become hilarious to watch how clueless these people are at the internet.
Well, this ruling was by Northern District of California Judge Charles Breyer. And does that name sound a little bit familiar to anyone?
Maybe. Who is that?
He was the federal judge who presided over the Ed Rosenthal trial in 2007, where he refused to let the defense actually put on a defense and explain to the jury that Rosenthal was an unpaid worker for the city of Oakland dispensing medical marijuana to patients under state law. So the jury ended up convicting him as this dangerous drug dealer, and when they got out and found the real truth, you know, they hit the ceiling, and they all said that if they'd been told the truth, they never would have convicted him.
The honorable judge indeed.
Yeah, and the rest of his record isn't that good either. He's upheld, like, free speech restrictions and also said that a witness recanting her testimony doesn't count as new evidence and denied a new trial on that basis. So now Judge Breyer is saying that changing your IP address or going through a proxy server or something that makes your IP address appear different to the server constitutes unauthorized access.
Your Honor, either get with the times or quit your job because you're no good if you think it's still the 1950s.
Now, this case involved Craigslist, which blocked a company called 3Taps. 3Taps was scraping its online content, and so Craigslist blocked their IP address. So they just started using new IP addresses and started going through proxy servers, and so Craigslist sued them.
Wait, you mean Craigslist?
Yes.
S, just...
Oh, sorry. My speech impediment coming back. So Craigslist sued them. So at first glance, you might say, well, that's a good thing. They were misbehaving on the site. The site wanted to kick them off. And so, you know, you ban them by IP address. You know, I do that with spammers. You ban the IP address and the email and stuff like that. It's a great way to block spammers and troublesome users. But the thing is, Craigslist's listing is public. Anyone can go there and read it. And there's all the difference in the world between saying you can't access the site you're specifically blocked from and saying it's illegal merely to change your IP address. I mean, we've known about dynamic addresses and proxy servers for many years now. When you make this kind of restriction, you have to understand the limitations of it. An IP ban, you know, they can just get another IP address and come back on. It's just something you have to deal with. It's nothing new.
And this just demonstrates another problem. People who argue that we need government to regulate and everything. And look at the examples like this, where he's trying to regulate something that he clearly does not know the first thing about. And this is quite typical behavior. Even the most well-meaning people in government have a very bad habit of adding these regulations and having no, and not only not understanding the consequences of it, not even having a clear idea of what they're regulating. So I really don't see why people have to cling to this idea that we gotta have government regulations.
You're listening to the Bogosity Podcast. You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.bogosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.bogosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. Welcome back to the Bogosity Podcast. And each time I do one of these stories, I feel I have to apologize. There are so many bad cop stories out there, it's unbelievable. And so we have to refrain from doing most of them or we'd never talk about anything else. But there comes a time where it's just so extreme we have to cover it.
I had a feeling you were going with cops behaving badly from that introduction.
Yep. And I always feel the same way, but man, when it gets extreme, it gets extreme. It all started with a routine traffic stop this past January. David Eckert was pulling out of a Walmart parking lot, and according to law enforcement, he didn't stop at the stop sign. Okay? Remember this. This is failure to stop at a stop sign. Right. So the officer pulled him over and asked him to step out of a vehicle, and things took a turn for the surreal. The officer said that it looked as if Eckert was clenching his buttocks, and somehow that made it probable cause to suspect him of hiding narcotics in his anus.
Or maybe he was just nervous?
Yeah, because people totally stop at Walmart to shop while they're doing that. Well, they actually got a warrant from a judge to do a cavity search. They took him to an emergency room, and thankfully the doctor there refused to perform the search because it's completely unethical and good for him. But not so for the doctors at Gila Regional Medical Center. They agreed to perform the procedure, and here's what happened. Now remember, this is from failure to stop at a stop sign. That's all he did, and that was even alleged. Ecker was x-rayed. No drugs were found. Then they did a cavity search with their fingers. No drugs were found. Then they did another cavity search with their fingers. No drugs were found. They then inserted an enema. He was forced to defecate with doctors and police officers watching. And the doctor searched his stool. No drugs were found. Are you spotting a trend here?
So all this over a vague claim with no actual evidence behind it.
Oh, I'm not done yet. They did a second enema. Again, he was forced to defecate in front of them. Doctors once again searched his stool. Say it with me now.
No drugs were found.
Yeah. Then they did a third enema. Now that's five times so far they have penetrated his rectum. They searched his stool again, and what do you think happened?
No drugs were found.
And then, for some bizarre reason, they did another x-ray. Any guesses as to what the result was?
Do we even need to say it at this point?
And finally, they prepped him for surgery, sedated him, and did a colonoscopy. And they searched his anus, rectum, colon, and large intestine. And what did they find?
Nothing?
Nothing. No drug. Well, nothing that's not supposed to be there.
The most steadfast determination to be right I've ever seen in my life. That's what they found.
I mean, you can... I mean, geez. But at no point did Eckert consent to any of these procedures. In fact, he kept protesting the whole time.
Good frickin' Lord. Looks like some people were looking for thrills. These people should be jailed as sex offenders for this.
Anna, this was rape! There's no two ways about it. His anus was repeatedly penetrated without his consent. These police officers and these doctors are guilty of rape. And if anyone other than government agents had ordered it, they absolutely would have been arrested and charged with rape.
Well, except they did it to a guy, so and in the law books, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it the law books? If it happens to a guy, it's not considered rape. It's considered some other term, which sounds a lot nicer.
I think that's the case in England. I think here, they have, finally, a few years ago, realized that, yes, men can be raped, but they still don't recognize forced envelopment as rape. So an anal penetration like this would be raped, but they still don't recognize forced envelopment.
Forced envelopment.
Yeah, that's a nice little clinical term for it, isn't it?
That just sounds like, you know, Orwell's whole concept of changing language to change thought. His whole concept of newspeak.
Yeah. But I have to say it again. It was a traffic stop because he failed to stop at a stop sign, allegedly. I mean, this could happen to any one of us. As Eckert's attorney, Shannon Kennedy, explains, quote, "If the officers in Hidalgo County and the city of Deming are seeking warrants for anal cavity searches based on how they're standing, and the warrant allows doctors at the Gila Hospital of Horrors to go in and do enemas and colonoscopies without consent, then anyone can be seized, and that's why the public needs to know about this."
Absolutely. These people's faces need to be plastered all over the internet and shamed as sex offenders. They absolutely are. I mean, forget cops behaving badly. This is the kind of bad cop that other bad cops would shun.
Wait, thin blue line.
Yep. Can't go against other cops. As it is, Eckert's only hope for justice seems to be his civil lawsuit, so best of luck to him.
But without government, who would protect us from the rapists and the perverts? Simple. We'd stop giving them badges.
So it seems like every week we find another way the NSA snooping was a lot worse than we thought. We've known for a few months they were sniffing internet traffic on public switches. Now, thanks to yet another Edward Snowden revelation, we know that they secretly broke into the main communications links that Google and Yahoo data centers around the world use to connect to the internet, in cahoots with the British equivalent of the NSA, the Government Communication Headquarters, or GCHQ.
Now, what do they call this when anybody but the government does this?
Being a creepy voyeur?
And none of this was done with the cooperation of Google or Yahoo. And understand, this was on privately bought or leased fiber optic lines. And they had every reason to believe that these transmissions were secure.
Now they've got all the tons and tons of data that would probably take them the rest of their lives to filter through. What are they possibly hoping to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so this is another slide from their slideshow, although to me it looks more like a post-it note.
Yeah, the very scientific drawing I see here.
I can't even make it out. I see Google Cloud and public internet.
Yeah, the Google Cloud is Google's private network, and the public internet is the internet. And then you have the GFE in the middle, and it stands for Google Front End. And they have this thing that says SSL added and removed here. And there's actually a little smiley face. They drew a little smiley face next to it.
Yeah, I love that little touch. Very professional.
But what it's actually talking about is when you make an SSL connection, the certificate verifies that you got to that server, and then the server sends it back to you encrypted. What they're doing is they're going into the Google front end, and they're taking Google's proper SSL certificate and replacing it with one of their own so they can see what's going on.
You know, sometimes I think this is why they've been so slow to update the laws to identify data as property and things like that. Because if they did that, then it would make this a little more clear that what they're doing is not exactly right.
But again, you or I would do it. It would be hacking. It would be cyber terrorism and all this sort of stuff.
Government, the eternal exception to everything.
Well, Google engineer Brandon Downey posted to Google Plus on this, and he actually said, F these guys. He didn't say F, he wrote out the whole word. And these guys referring to the NSA. With the disclaimer, you know, these are my own thoughts and not those of my employer, but he says, "I've spent the last 10 years of my life trying to keep Google's users safe and secure from the many diverse threats that Google faces. and he talks about some of the things that he's seen. But even though we suspected this was happening, it still makes me terribly sad. It makes me sad because I believe in America. But after spending all that time helping in my tiny way to protect Google, one of the greatest things to arise from the internet seeing this, well, it's just a little like coming home from war with Sauron, destroying the One Ring, only to discover the NSA is on the front porch of the Shire, chopping down the party tree and outsourcing all the hobbit farmers with half-orcs and whips. The US has to be better than this, but I guess in the interim, that security job is looking a lot more like a Sisyphus thing than ever.
Incredibly nerdy analogy, but I personally approve of it.
Wait, he's from Google and he's nerdy? Who'd have thought?
I'm trying to think, what is this protecting us from again?
Well, they have to spy on all our stuff, because if they didn't, then other people might spy on all our stuff, I guess, or something.
Yeah, in other news, I broke all my windows to foil those vandals. Yeah, I sure showed you guys.
Well, another Google engineer, Mike Hearn, chimed in about it, too, says, I now join him being Brandon Downey, in issuing a giant F-U, and again, he spelled out the word, to the people who made these slides. I'm not American, I'm a Brit, but it's no different. GCHQ turns out to be even worse than the NSA. We designed this system to keep criminals out. There's no ambiguity here. The warrant system with skeptical judges, paths for appeal, and rules of evidence was built from centuries of hard-won experience. When it works, it represents as good a balance as we've got between the need to restrain the state and the need to keep crime in check. Bypassing that system is illegal for a good reason. Unfortunately, we live in a world where all too often laws are for the little people. Nobody at GCHQ or the NSA will ever stand before a judge and answer for this industrial-scale subversion of the judicial process. In the absence of working law enforcement, we therefore do what internet engineers have always done. Build more secure software. The traffic shown in the slides below is now all encrypted, and the work the NSA and GCHQ staff did on understanding it, ruined. Thank you, Edward Snowden. For me personally, this is the most interesting revelation all summer. So Google's now just encrypting everything, so, you know, here, NSA, have this blob of pseudo-random noise. Good luck with that.
Wait, I just have something. Something he said just kind of struck me. We live in a world where laws are for the little people. Compared to what here?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it's always been. Different rules for thee than for me.
Yeah, I'm truly sorry you guys had to learn this lesson this way, but it's what we've been trying to warn you about for a long time, because as horrendous as I find this to be, I'm not the least bit surprised by it. It's what they want, it's what they've always wanted. There's never been a point in history where they didn't want to know absolutely everything.
There was a little comic about this one, actually, posted on another board I frequent. It was a politician coming out and saying, we need to know everything about you to make you safe. You can't know anything about us because you won't be safe. In order for you to be safe, there needs to be a complete asymmetry of information.
You're listening to the Bogosity Podcast from Bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy.com. I've been a satisfied GoDaddy customer for over 10 years now. Their prices are great, and their 24/7 support is second to none, so I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or many other services, and get 20% off by typing in the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about the savings on quality internet service. Get your own .com with a personalized email address, or establish your online business in a snap, all for 20% off. And you'll help this podcast, too. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials, and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. Welcome back to the Bogosity Podcast. We are Tim, DJ, and Shane with our sights set on this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week, it's Canada. Yes, Canada. So it's your fault, Tim.
I tried to warn him. I really did.
Again, South Park comes to mind. Blame Canada. I don't know the tune to that song.
This is Canada for you. I found that song absolutely hilarious when I heard it.
Canadians probably love it more than we do.
Yeah, don't worry. You won't see any of those magazine ads where, this is not me and I'm offended or whatever the heck that is.
Well, a while back we talked about the Liberator, that 3D printable gun from Defense Distributed. Seems to have gotten a lot of politicians' panties in a twist. So Canada's Public Safety Department wants to try to make technology built into printers to prevent them from printing guns. Yeah, this ought to work about as well as those automatic pornography filters.
Oh, yeah. People, the Mafia were making their own Tommy guns forever. I think you're way late to the party on this.
What about those people like in the Philippines and they have this like little grass hut somewhere and inside they've got all these machinist tools and they're making automatic weapons and stuff? I mean, I guess the whole idea is this would be software that would reside in your computer, actually sounding more like malware, but it would somehow recognize that what you're printing is a gun and stop you from doing it. But all you could really do, you could probably stop specific designs of guns, but all someone would have to do is just change it a little bit, and it would look completely different to the computer, and they could print it out.
Yeah, make one of those little gun pens they used to have or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's like the technology they tried to automatically bleep swear words. It never works, folks. It never works. We're not talking about anything objective. I mean, we think there's some sort of platonic ideal that, you know, all guns conform to this, all porn conforms to that or whatever. It just doesn't work that way.
I mean, the market is always innovating with their designs, pretty much. So who knows what the next gun is going to look like? Are they going to have to legally require, you know what? I should stop myself right there. They probably are going to do that. Every manufacturer to hand over their blueprints.
Yeah, but that will just mean people will be changing them to something that bypasses the system and putting them up on the Pirate Bay.
Oh, yeah. Every time they try and do these things, like when they try to put in SOPA in, Firefox had a workaround to it before the law was even going to be put into practice.
Oh, Wikipedia had a workaround. That sent a message.
Well, these are people, I mean, it's their job. If there's like some big security flaw or something, they have to be able to jump in and make changes on the fly to fix things. That's what their job is. That's what they keep doing. That's what they're good at. So by the time Congress is finished debating on this or that or whatever, you know, they've already acted and they've got the fixes in before Congress even passes the law.
Kind of reminds me of that thing about Costco you posted once on the Bogosity page. Costco finding bad meat or bad produce and recalling it before the FDA even noticed anything?
Oh, yeah, I think I do remember that. And meanwhile, over in the UK, British forces have seized plastic gun parts made on a 3D printer. It's like they're really getting worried this whole thing is getting away from them.
It already has. Last I checked, criminals in Britain managed to get guns anyway, much as they like to deny that.
But it's actually kind of funny because these plastic guns, they really don't work very well. I mean, you get one shot out of them if you're lucky. Turns out plastic is kind of a sucky material to make guns out of, which is why I guess Glock doesn't make any plastic pistols.
Isn't plastic a bit easier to melt?
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got all the hot gases and friction and everything. And good luck trying to get that bullet to rifle. But now we have the world's first 3D printed metal gun from a company called Solid Concepts. And guess what? It works just the way a gun should.
Oh, noes. I've seen pictures of people making their own guns out of improvised materials. They're not the best guns, but they are functional.
Yeah, zip guns. But this is printed using a laser sintering method on powdered metal. And I mean, it looks just like a real gun, and they've got videos of test firing. I mean, it's just like a real gun. Looks like it, fires like it. No machining done at all. Now, this isn't something you're going to be able to print out on your home 3D printer, at least not for a while. Right now, the printer to do it costs about as much as a house. But no, they're a licensed firearms manufacturer, and they're using 3D printing as their manufacturing process. But in 20, 30, 50 years down the road, who knows? And that's exactly what they're afraid of.
The anti-gun arguments, all of them, just contain one massive fundamental flaw. Whatever law you want to hit these people with, the law is ultimately backed up by the threat of force itself if someone does not comply. People, you can't be anti-gun when you clearly use guns to solve your all your problems.
Well, I mean, it's like all these celebrities that are about, people shouldn't have guns, people don't need guns to protect them, while they walk around with bodyguards with guns protecting them.
Rules for thee, not for me. You know, Tim actually had a decent biblical analogy for that a few podcasts ago. Master to servant, turn the other cheek. Servant to master, eye for an eye.
Yep. But the fact is, you know, they're so afraid about people being able to make their own guns and everything. And the fact is, they don't have one way of stopping it.
Yeah, technology's outpacing them, and I think eventually they're going to lose the control that they crave so much.
Which is why the Canadian government absolutely deserves to be this week's biggest bogon emitter. So now it's time to crack the encrypted bogons of this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Sorry.
You just felt the moment coming.
Sorry about that. I couldn't resist.
And this week it goes to a well-respected company that makes top-of-the-line software and has gotten way too much of my money. Adobe. They're the guys who make Photoshop and After Effects, and they do Flash and the PDF reader that so many people use online. And they were recently the victims of a massive hacker attack that just showed how amazingly stupid their password security was. So I know this is going to be another geeky one, but I mean, this is the kind of thing everyone needs to understand stuff like this. It's important nowadays. Hackers broke in. That happens. They stole the password database. That's a pretty big deal, but it's not the end of the world. Adobe said in a release that their passwords were encrypted, and those of us in the know kind of figured they misspoke, that they meant salted and hashed. And I explained this a few podcasts ago. You don't want to encrypt passwords because that means they can be decrypted. You hash them, which is one way. You scramble them in a way that cannot be descrambled. So the only thing you can do is you put in your password, and then you scramble that password, and then you see if the hashes match. Now, the problem with that is a lot of people use the same password. So, like, if the three of us are all stupid and we use password as our password, as a lot of people do, it'll hash it the same way so that every time a hacker sees that particular string, that particular hash, they'll know that that's what the password is. So you have a salt, and a salt is really just a random number. And it just puts entropy in it. It means that even if we all use the same password, the hashes are going to end up being different.
So it's like just taking something, translating it into an illegible font like Wingdings, and then just putting a random character in there.
Well, it's not even doing an illegible font. It's just turning it into this string of what looks like pseudo-random noise. And there's no way to get any meaning out of it, but if you use that same hashing algorithm on the same password and the same salt, you'll get the same result, and that's how they compare passwords.
Just like those old puzzles where there's something's written in code, and if you look for common word patterns, you can figure out what the symbols mean.
Well, that's actually, keep that in mind, because that's what we're getting to. Because it turns out, these passwords weren't hashed, they were encrypted, and in a very stupid way. This isn't quite healthcare.gov level fail, but it's pretty bad. It's up there. So something like 150 million users all had their information, like their email addresses, the encrypted passwords, and the password hints. And they were encrypted into 8-byte blocks. And what that means is the first 8 characters of the password were in the first block, the next 8 were in the second block, and so on, you know, depending on how long your password is. Which means that if you decrypted the first 8 characters, you didn't have to decrypt the rest. You could decrypt 8 characters at a time. And that's bad. And what's worse is they seem to have encrypted it with zero entropy. And entropy just means that, like what I was saying earlier with the hashes, if we use the same password, that salt puts entropy into it so it'll get hashed a different way. With entropy, if we all use the same password and encrypt it, the encrypted result will be different. But no, there was no entropy here. So the encrypted result was always the same. So if we all use password as our password, then encryption is going to end up being the same. And every time you see that particular pattern, you'll know that the password is password.
Yeah, people, don't use common words. Those are the first things that hackers go for because they're easy pickings.
Yep. They actually run what's called a dictionary attack. They have this whole list of, you know, tens of thousands of words, and they check those first. And they actually show this on the links that I have. They show how they have the email and the password data, and they have, you know, the string that's the encrypted data, and then they have the password hint. And so you have things like, there's this block there in the middle, and you have the gobbledygook, and then the password hint says, the password is password. When that person put in the password of password, and they said, give me a, they just said what the password was.
Oh, no.
And then the second one they have, same string, same gobbledygook, the password hint is password. And the third one, same gobbledygook, I love this password hint, it says, rhymes with ass word.
I need more hints. I don't know what that is. Come on, can someone help me?
Yeah, you're
here?
Never gonna guess that one.
Really? They're this they're this stupid?
But here's the thing. Even if you used the password, if you were clever enough to not put in a password hint or put in something that was clever or deceptive or whatever, it scrambles it up the same way. So that the fact that someone else uses a password hint that makes it easy to guess, and you use that same password, they've got your password too.
Oh dear.
Apparently that's more common than it really should be. It's ridiculous.
And you see things like that, like one of the passwords they keep using is 123456. They've actually got a list of the top 50 passwords that were in this list.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, and it's depressing. Like, come on, people. Is that really all the creativity you have? Like, I use proper names or words from other languages or stuff like that. Or sometimes I use small, short phrases if it allows me. That's the thing. It's more secure to make just a password that's a phrase that's familiar to you. But the problem is, a lot of sites, they don't even let you do that. They say, no, you have to put the numbers here. You have to have it like this.
It's, I know.
That doesn't help.
It's ridiculous. It's not the complexity of the needle. It's the size of the haystack. And you should be able to do, like in that XKCD comic, you know, correct horse battery staple, that kind of thing, and make a mnemonic to remember it.
Yeah, I've seen that one where he actually calculates how long it would take to crack the common password and how long it would take to crack the correct horse battery stapler password. And yeah, like it was like 40 letters compared to the average 10 or so letters of an average password. And the result? 10-digit password takes a little time, but not very much. The 40-digit one, that's where it's just four random words, it would take like 500 years to crack it. Not worth even trying.
The best way to do it, and I've mentioned this before, is to use LastPass and just have it randomly generate these long strings of nonsense and use that as your password. But no, the most popular one was 123456. Second popular was 123456789. Third popular one was password. You know, and they're using QWERTY, QWERTY, the first few letters on the keyboard, stuff like that. My personal favorite, the 26th most used password in Adobe, was monkey.
What?
Monkey.
Monkey?
So for some reason, we keep seeing passwords like this up. People think they're being nice and random. I mean, monkey is just like this completely off the wall, out of left field type thing. No one else would ever think to put in monkey, would they? And yet for some reason, our brains aren't that random and we keep going to the same things.
The thing with monkey is it's obvious random. It's obvious silly in that way. People confuse silly with random.
Well, and then there's stuff like princess and dragon and stuff like that. So, you know, that thing you're thinking that's random, it might not be so random. But this is great. I mentioned XKCD a second ago. He did a comic on this thing and kind of showed how it works and called it the greatest crossword puzzle in the history of the world. And LastPass actually has a tool, and you don't even have to have LastPass to do it. Just go to their website, and you can put in your email address, and it'll tell you if your email address is one of the ones that was compromised by this. But I mean, you might not even need to do that. If you have an Adobe ID, I mean, they require that even if you install, like, if you're trying to install the trial version of Photoshop, they made you create an Adobe ID. Just go in there, change the password. And if your old password, you were also using that in other places, change it those other places too. But I do recommend LastPass and just go through and just make them all random. Yeah, if Adobe had just used salted hashes, the solution used for well over a decade, they wouldn't have had a problem. So that most definitely earns them the title of this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
That is very distracting.
Sorry.
Sorry. Well, that wraps up this 99 44 100% pure edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at Bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free, but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the Bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page, and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@Bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks once more to my co-hosts, Tim Dyson and Daniel Wilcox.
Pleasure as always. Keep safe.
Pleasure.
Until next time, here's a quote from Harry Brown. Every time our leaders say, we must make sure this will never happen again, they do something to assure that it will happen again. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Bogosity. Christmas time is coming, and the most classic of Christmas stories is A Christmas Carol. But how much do you know about the original Charles Dickens novella? Have you dismissed it as a children's book with one-dimensional characters amounting to nothing but platitudes and cliches? Maybe your appreciation of the book was even muted by those dry, boring, annotated books they made you read in school. My book, the sarcastically annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, uses both facts and humor to present the book in a way you probably haven't seen it before. Giving praise when deserved and beratement when warranted, this book is put in the perspective of its time and shows a dimensional, multi-layered Ebenezer Scrooge from start to finish. Skepticism, history, and even economics are employed to show the book in relation to today in an easily accessible format. Appreciate the Christmas of your youth all over again. Get The Sarcastically Annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, available at Amazon and on PDF as well.
We should do a blooper reel.
Yeah, you know that little bit at the end, you know, where I say it's, you know, it's copyright and all that with Creative Commons? Sometimes it takes me 4 or 5 takes to get that. Seriously. Welcome back to the Bogosity Podcast. We are Tim D. Yeah.